In my revision for my upcoming epistemology mock exam for my philosophy A level, I was going over Gettier problems and the responses to them. I'll leave the problem of defining knowledge for another episode when I have the willpower to write a script and episode notes and not procrastinate and not wait a whole month to upload another episode. But nevertheless, that's unimportant now because I wanted to focus on one response that I found very interesting and I've been thinking about over the past few days. I wanted to focus on infallibilism and its strict requirements for justification. You see, infallibilist logic argues that for one person to have what we would define as knowledge, the thing that we can then state, I know this, whatever that is, we would not only have to say something that is true and believe in it, but our justification for it, and therefore itself being a fact, must be absolutely infallible, meaning that it must not be falsifiable at all or come also under any degree of doubt. Because if we can doubt something, that means that it could be false. That means that it cannot then be infallible. So even if we have the slightest degree of doubt, it cannot be classed as knowledge, even if it's just a tiny bit of doubt, right? But under the slightest bit of philosophy, right, under the slightest bit of thought, under the slightest bit of evaluation of this, it seems almost impossible to reach. You know, we can doubt everything in this world, almost everything. You know, Descartes says, well, we can't doubt ourselves, but a lot of people do doubt ourselves. Where does ourselves come from? What if we're philosophical zombies? I mean, that's a whole nother problem that we can get into. What if we're just machines that have been codified into believing that we actually exist, believing that we are conscious, believing we have all these properties, when really we don't? We're just binary numbers. We're just code. We're just a bunch of ones and zeros. We can still doubt us very existing, right? Or our very existence, if I want to be grammatically correct. But Noam Chomsky said anything that sounds good is grammatically correct, but I won't get into that. Defenders of infallibilism, I must state that there aren't really a lot of them, by the way. They say, however, that, well, we can doubt everything in the world, but our only perfect claim to knowledge is if something can't be doubted at all. Because if something can't be doubted at all, then it has to be true, and then it has to be knowledge. X has to exist. If X's existence is totally undoubtable, then of course it must exist. There's no possible reason for us to doubt it at all. There's no red flag. There's no little bit of, no, it just exists. Therefore, it is true. And, you know, this got me thinking, not on infallibilism, and today's episode isn't on infallibilism. That would end in about 10 minutes. I want to talk for a bit longer. You know, it got me talking about something and thinking about it. You know, it got me thinking about the concept of perfection. Because, I mean, that's what they're essentially advocating for. They're essentially advocating for this, like, perfect example of knowledge. This perfect knowledge that everybody has to, you know, behold as, like, the perfect standard. Something that cannot be doubted at all, right? That is perfection. I mean, to an extent, sure, that's a perfect bit of knowledge. But, I mean, the concept of perfection itself, it's a pretty interesting one. If we leave the infallibilist argument for a second and think about perfection, right? Because it's very interesting and intriguing to me, because on the one hand, while a lot of people do accept, oh, you can't be perfect, human beings are imperfect, you know, there's all these problems in the world with us, there's all these problems in the universe doesn't follow perfect rules, we still kind of spend our entire lives attempting to reach it. I mean, we want the perfect house, the perfect relationship. In fact, if I Google the perfect job, it gives me 2.9 million results in less than a second. So clearly, it's a concept that we slightly obsess over and also kind of want to achieve. I mean, who doesn't want to be perfect? We've all given that compliment out to somebody. I mean, I've been in lessons and been told I'm a perfect student. That's a lie. I've been told I'm a terrible student. But I do want to be called a perfect student. Who doesn't want to be called that? I mean, it's a compliment we give to people all the time. Oh, you're perfect. Oh, this car is perfect. I love it for that reason. And we do use it, like a lot of other words in a semantic sense, kind of just loosely. We don't really think about, you know, what does perfect actually mean, right? But as a philosopher, as someone who overthinks, or I would argue thinks just enough, I want to spend an episode thinking about this, thinking specifically about perfection and trying to pick it apart. I mean, why do we crave or like lust for this perfection if we live in such an imperfect world? It's kind of silly if you think about it, right? But I mean, let's get into it. My name is Mohammed Hassan. This is the Left Wing Propaganda Machine. Today, we're going to do some philosophy, some true philosophy, philosophical thinking. We're going to use logic and reasoning and all these big brain ideas. And we're going to use morality and ethics and religion and God. We're going to have a jam-packed episode where we do a lot of thinking. So get ready. But I will try and make it as funny or as enjoyable as possible. That's why there's a whole month gap between this and the last episode, because I've been trying to think of jokes for this. That's a lie. Again, I'm lying a lot. I apologize. I'm not perfect though, but I'll defend myself later on. Don't you worry about it. I've lost my train of thought. Perfection, imperfections. Let's get back into it. Perfection, and today's episode is all about trying to understand that. I might have been going off on one tangent and now going off on another, but I think that we can start somewhere. And why I actually decided to think about this episode. So how did I get to this concept of perfection? I did get it from the infallibilism one, but what made me do this episode right now is ethics, right? So not only epistemology do I study, but I also study ethics, and I was studying Kant as well. I was also studying Kant, and Kant is very famous for being very strict in his philosophy, right? His moral philosophy is very codified. There's a lot of rules to it. There's formulations you have to follow, because it's all about upholding reason, right? It's all as upholding reason as this one intrinsically good thing, essentially this one perfectly good thing. It's not perfect for anything else in itself, or it's not good for anything else in itself. It's just good in itself. And this, of course, comes with a lot of problems, and I won't get into Kantian ethics right now. But, of course, the biggest problem in moral philosophy, which is a problem that has been argued over for centuries, even though Hume himself didn't really care about it that much, even though he's the one who put it forward, because it's not a massive part of his treatise on human nature, it's the is-ought gap. You see, the is-ought gap really got me thinking about perfection. Because what is knowledge? Well, knowledge is all about what is, right? Knowledge is all about what is. Well, that is X, that is Y. I am Muhammad. Well, I can doubt that, so the infallibilist would, of course, argue that. But, of course, there's a bunch of stuff, right, in the world that we would classify as knowledge, okay? Even if we're not infallibilists, that is what is, right? And Hume says, well, we have what is in the world. We can know what is, right? We look around the world. We see what is. I see a computer screen in front of me. I see a microphone. I see a mechanical keyboard. I see a mouse. I see flashcards of my English revision right next to me. And I can tell you what is around me. But we can't derive what ought to be, what should be, what values we should hold from just the is. There's no logical link there. Just because something is that way doesn't mean it ought to be. There's a gap, the is-ought gap. Now this philosophy, right, this part of philosophy is called meta-ethics, right? It's a part of philosophy where we question morality. Can we have moral truths in the world? And obviously Hume disagrees with that. Well, we can't have moral truths in the world. He's an emotivist. He believes that moral conclusions or moral propositions are just beliefs and assumptions that we hold about what the world should be, because we can't know what ought to be from what is. Now, it's not a very complicated idea, but it's an incredibly important one, right? Because if we have what is the ought, and that's what we want, essentially, but if that can't be connected to anything, because all we can get to is the is, then what is the perfect good, right? Then what should we do, right? There seems to be a problem here. I can't make any moral statements from what I see. But we need moral statements, right? We need a world with rules and guidelines and things to follow. Now, of course, Hume doesn't say that we don't need morals. He doesn't go that far. But he just says that there is no truth in the moral reasonings that we come to, or the moral conclusions that we tell other people to follow. They're just based on assumptions and essentially our emotions and our feelings. He's a massive skeptic, and he doesn't believe that we can believe in moral truths, right? Now, this is a specific problem for me. Why? Because I'm very interested in ethics. In fact, my whole pursuit in philosophy, my whole pursuit in the world really is to try and find out what is good. That's what I'm truly interested in. I want to know what is good, because I believe that if we can find out what is good, then everything else just follows from that. Our politics, our way of life, what we're supposed to do, how we should live our lives, all these things stem from what is good. We just need to find out what the definition of good is. And I've said this before in conversations with people, I might have said it on this podcast, that philosophy really is a problem of definitions. Once we find out what is this, then, well, there's no more philosophizing. Philosophy is trying to find out what that thing is, whether that be knowledge, whether that be the mind, whether that be, you know, ethics, all of these things. If we knew what they were, there would really be no philosophy. You see, no one philosophizes about facts. That's science. No one philosophizes about, you know, the circumference of a circle. That's just what is. There's a definition to that, right? The diameter of the circle times by pi. Pi d, right? There's no philosophy involved in that. There's mathematical truth, right? You just know it. But philosophy is all about trying to find this definition, and we've been debating for thousands of years, millennia, over what is good, and that was my question. In fact, I wrote my whole personal statement around that question. I said, I want to be at your university studying philosophy, so one day I can find out what is good, and then I can tell the world, and I'll be this amazing guy, right? So I was going to find the perfect good, right? I was gonna do that. But Hume's problem here obviously kind of derails that, and I've been thinking about it for days now, and for weeks really, since I first learned it, because it's a massive problem that I kind of ignored for a bit. I was going to do an Ayn Rand and just ignore Hume's philosophy, but then I realized, well, I want to find the perfect good, right? That's what this infallibilism thing showed me. I kind of want to do the same thing. I kind of want to be like, okay, there's this perfect good, and that's how we follow it. Everything derives from this perfect good. Kind of like what Kant did. I'm very inspired by Kant and Kant. I'm going to say it in different ways because, you know, I'm an inclusive guy. And I respect all accents. But Kant or Kant, of course, tried to do this. He tried to use reason. Now, I'm not sure if I'm going to use reason. I'm not sure if I'm going to use my emotions. I'm not sure if I'm going to find a brand new method when I go to university or when I go further in my studies of what is good. But that's kind of what I want to do, right? I want to find the perfect good. But Hume's gap made me kind of think about it for a bit. Hume's gap made me think about this perfect good. Why am I obsessed with this perfect good? Well, of course, because it's my wonderful knowledge and I think it would be really helpful to us, right? Because in the political world, we don't know what is good. There's not a problem of what is right or wrong. We can't decide on the basic consensus that we should build our politics off of. I mean, that's the entire problem with the left and the right. The right wants to build politics on this kind of hierarchical, kind of non-egalitarian, kind of free-for-all, imperfect human nature, all this stuff. That's where they want to build their consensus off. But the left wants to build this consensus of cooperation, egalitarianism, all, you know, the nice utopian stuff. And now today I'm actually going to be a bit unbiased, even though I'm very clearly left wing. You know, we need to find a consensus. And I thought, oh, if I find what the good is, then we can come to a consensus. And once we come to a consensus, well, it's very easy to derive a good thing from there, or a good conclusion from a consensus, right? Because if people all agree, yeah, we want to cross a river, then, well, it becomes very easy to, you know, say, okay, how do we cross the river? Not why should we cross the river? The problem in the world right now is, do we even cross the river? Some people say the green is grasser on the other side. Some people say we're in the grassest, greenest grass ever right now. Whatever the hell that means, I don't understand what they're saying either. I know I've very confused you right now. That's not the point. Perfection is this thing that I'm kind of obsessed with because it's the good, right? The perfect good. But then Hume's gap gave me a bit of a problem. Because is perfection a fact or is it a concept? You see, if perfection is a fact, then we can, of course, know what perfect is. I mean, it just is perfect, right? But how do we do that, of course? That's the question. How do we know what is perfect? How do we know what is good just from what is? But if it's a concept, then I have to deal with the is-or gap. If it's a concept, just a human social structure that we came to and decided, yeah, that's the word for the most amazing thing, this thing with absolutely no imperfections, absolutely no problems, then there's a bit of an issue there. Because I have to deal with Hume's is-or gap. I can't call something perfect because it's not what is, it's what ought to be or what I want it to be. But of course, if something is perfect, then I don't have to deal with the is-ought gap, because I don't have to make that logical link. It just is. Perfect is that. And Hume would say, hey, you know what? Sure, it is that. And then I can base my moral philosophy or my what is good from that fact about the universe. It would be like the facts of science, the fact of physics. But is perfection a scientific truth, right? Is it something that we can reach in a lab or reach through, you know, the scientific method or reach through these hypothesizing? And is something that we can materially see within the world, say, hey, that's perfect. It meets all these conditions. Or are those conditions arbitrary? All those conditions based on something that, hey, you know, well, it's whatever. Perfect is whatever you want to be. You know, it's in the eye of the beholder. You know, what's perfect to you is different to what's perfect to me. And that's a wholly different problem. It's not a problem of, oh, we just disagree on the scientific fact like some people in a lab do. We're not disagreeing over anything. We just have different opinions that can both coexist. They are just contradictory in their reasoning. But their reasoning doesn't really matter because it's not based on anything. And now, this is, of course, a problem, as I said, because if perfection is something that we really want, but we can never have, then, I mean, like, what's the meaning of us following it all the time? As I said, millions of people search for things like the perfect job, how to get the perfect relationship, all these things, right? You know? But the problem is, do we kind of obsess over perfect so much? I mean, if we look at the coronavirus handling right now, some people have claimed that New Zealand dealt with it in a perfect way. But I mean, New Zealand doesn't have zero deaths. If I wanted to scrutinize New Zealand, I could say that they still got some deaths on them. You know, some countries still have like 3 or 4 deaths. I mean, is that perfect? I mean, that's kind of rude to the 3 or 4 people that died. Hey, the world is perfect now without you. I mean, that's a bit rude, wouldn't we say? I mean, I wouldn't like to die and then everyone say, oh, everything's perfect because they died. I mean, but they don't really matter, so it's fine. So it doesn't really seem that there is this perfect. It doesn't really seem that, you know, anything in this world that we have is totally perfect. There's a lot of arbitrary lines that human beings are drawing up. But I mean, why do we crave it? Why do we crave perfection? Why do we kind of want perfection? And I kind of drew 3 quick kind of conclusions, 3 quick kind of reasons and justifications for why we crave perfection. I think that they stem from 3 areas, right? I think the scientific world largely influences this crave for perfection. Because with the scientific mode of, you know, reasoning and the scientific method, we came to this brand new way of deciding what is, right? We can say what is. Oh, that's a rock. It has these atoms in it. It has these elements in it, blah, blah, blah. Those are all facts. They're all truths that we can test over and over again, and we'd get the same exact results every single time. Or we'd at least reach an average where the difference is so minimal, which is so just doesn't matter at all, that it is essentially is perfect. I mean, changing by 0.00000001% isn't going to change much, right? And I apologize to anyone who just got their ears incredibly hurt by that charade of zeros, but you understand what I mean, right? The scientific method gave us this brand new thing, and especially in our current time, no less it being a pandemic, science has kind of been grailed as this perfect thing. We're following the science, says Boris Johnson, as he then doesn't listen to Sage, who said you should go into a lockdown. But no politics today, just pure philosophy. We're getting out of the world, right? And so science has become this thing that we kind of go, okay, it's perfect, right? I mean, if a scientist said something, it has to be. You can't lie in science. A lie is an imperfection, right? You can't be wrong in science. Wrong is an imperfection. So science has to be perfect. Science has to have all these truths. We just need to wait for science to catch up with philosophy, to catch up with all these other things that have been around for millennia, and then we'll find the truth. I mean, that's kind of unfair, though. I mean, yeah, okay, modern science and modern technology has caused a massive boom, but science has been around for thousands of years. And I mean, has science not had enough time to kind of, you know, realize what would be perfect in the world? I mean, we have all the periodic elements or whatever, we're just making new ones. I mean, it got to the point where we can make new elements. Isn't that crazy? Right? So, I mean, is perfect arbitrary? Can we make the perfect element? I mean, what are scientists even asking in that sense? What is the perfect element? And I think that, you know, science doesn't even try to ask what is perfect. It just tries to ask what is. I mean, scientists are incredibly, you know, enamored and are very interested in, you know, these problems in the world, but not the same problems as philosophy. I mean, scientists don't want to know what is perfect. They just want to know why something happens. They want to know why black holes occur, or why cells grow in the way they do, or why a body does what a body does, or what a body does what it doesn't supposed to do, because that's also grammatically correct. Check out Noam Chomsky. I mean, even the concept of health within science, what's the perfect body? What's the perfect health? Not really. It's all contextual. It's all arbitrary. Right? And that's a bad thing. Right? Arbitrary is a bad thing, right? You can't have arbitrary nature, right? You can't have an arbitrary nature, because arbitrary, right? That's religion. That's the second place, right? Religion. Religion is this arbitrary, imperfect thing, right? But of course, there's God. God is perfect. We're imperfect. That's why science is imperfect. That's what a lot of religious people say. Science is imperfect because it's, of course, by imperfect creatures. How can I be part of a perfect academic field when I'm an imperfect creature? That just doesn't make any sense at all. But of course, perfection is also in religion, right? The same with the scientists claim, or some people at least in the sciences claim, or some people who observe the sciences claim, that we can get perfection through these scientific models, or these whatever the fuck scientists do. I haven't done biology, maths, physics, or chemistry for 2 years, and I do not want to go back, trust me. Right? They claim that can get us to these perfect truths or whatever, just like the infallibilists claim. But of course, the religious people say no. No, that's not true. These books are the perfect words. Well, which book? I mean, in Islam, the Quran is the word of God. And God is perfect. So, of course, anything God says or anything God decrees has to also be perfect. But in the Quran, there's a bunch of iffy stuff as well, too. I mean, Muhammad was supposed to be the, you know, Prophet Muhammad was supposed to be the perfect role model. But he also got married to a 9-year-old, which is, of course, no offense to anybody in Islam. I mean, that's something that I personally wouldn't do. And he said a lot of things that I personally wouldn't believe in. I mean, he said that men shouldn't wear gold or silk because they're womanly items. As a feminist and also a guy who likes gold, that's kind of not only misogynistic and weird, but that's not something I would claim as being a part of the perfect man. I mean, if the perfect person, if I find this person, right, this guy who is, like, enjoys all the music I like, right, enjoys all the anime I like to watch, plays all the video games I want to play, also likes philosophy, and is just a really nice person, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're not perfect for me just because they wear gold or they wear, like, a silk scarf around their neck or something. Yeah, that's a bit silly, right? To claim that, oh, okay, someone is not the perfect role model or the perfect person to look up to just because, you know, well, they wear gold. So in Islam, there's, of course, some kind of imperfections that I personally would believe. But again, the fact that I disagree with it, the fact that we can't fundamentally prove that this person is perfect or not perfect, whether they wear gold, or whether they marry children, or whether they, you know, do X, Y, or Z, or whether they, you know, follow the Bible or the Torah or whatever book they follow, right? I also just need to point out that when I say that we can't prove that someone isn't perfect because they marry children, I do not support child marriage at all. I do disagree with it a lot, but of course, Hume would say there is ought gap. That's just the moral assumption that I've come up to. It's not a moral fact about the world. Of course, I do disagree with it, though. Bring that up with Hume. Ask Hume what he thought about child marriage. Maybe it would be a bit different. I'm not sure. But anyway, again, even in religion, where they have this perfect God, what is the perfect God? Again, it seems arbitrary. What is the perfect person who worships God? You know, I mean, I'm doing the whole philosophy, the concept of God. Is the concept of God as a perfect being even a truly conceptual thing? Like, can we even perceive or conceptualize of something that's perfect? Maybe because our brains are so, you know, little and dumb, and we don't understand the entire world or whatever. You know, that's what a lot of religious people say. You know, we're not smart enough. We're epistemic toddlers. We're not smart enough to find out the justifications of God. We're not smart enough to understand God's power. God is so perfect, actually. He's so perfect, or she or they are so perfect, that we wouldn't even be able to begin to comprehend how perfect they are. That's kind of insane, isn't it? Right? That's kind of insane how perfect God would have to be for us to not understand him. Or maybe I'm being an arrogant human being, right? Because, you know, I'm a stupid boo-boo baba monkey doo-doo-da-da guy, right? That's who I am. I'm a dumb little monkey human being person. So I don't really understand, you know, what's going on there. But, you know, God's perfect. But I mean, of course, then we get this kind of problem. This other problem, I think, that where perfection comes from and this craving of perfection, we have the sciences, we have religion, right? But we also have sectarianism, right? I mean, my beliefs are perfect, right? They have to be. They have to be the most perfect beliefs, at least. But even that statement, the most perfect beliefs, there's levels to perfection. How can something be perfect but then be less perfect than the other perfect? That doesn't make any sense. But of course, people kind of don't think about this. The perfection comes from the fact that they're very defensive about their beliefs, especially in politics. I hold the perfect political way, and it has to be perfect, because if it's not perfect, then, well, aren't my political enemies justified? I mean, if they're justified, then I'm wrong. I have to become a Democrat. I can just see all of my viewers who live in the Rust Belt absolutely dying, because I'm sure that this video or podcast is going to get a lot of Rust Belt viewers. But no, see, my point is that another large part of our craving of perfection is that if we're perfect, if we know what perfect is, then we can say bah humbug to all these other people who don't believe in our ways. We can go to the Democrats and say, ha, Democrats, you're not perfect. I'm perfect. I win. I mean, it is, that's come on, that's kind of true. I mean, when I get the highest grade in the class, I look towards my enemy in the classroom, who I'm not going to say because my philosophy teacher listens to this. I know you're listening to this, sir. If you think you know who my enemy is, you're probably right, because you are usually right in these things. But either way, I get to look at him and say, haha, I'm perfect. You are not. I'm the greatest philosopher of all time. Bow down to me, peasant. It's a good feeling, right? I mean, and that's slightly why we do things. It's a good feeling. It's good to kind of feel perfect. I said this earlier. We like to be called perfect. We like to believe we're perfect. And if that means that my way of life, that my beliefs, that my presidential candidate or my prime minister or my political party or my political belief and my economic thoughts or whatever are perfect, and that those people are wrong that I disagree with, whoo, that's great. So if I can just prove that I have this perfect belief, if I can just prove I have this perfect party, if I have the perfect mode of production, well, then those other schmucks, they all are idiots, and I win, because winning is important. You see, I pointed out three areas for why we crave perfection: the sciences, and, you know, the fact that, you know, we're in this culture of worshipping modern science, right, and worshipping this kind of pursuit of perfection through, you know, what is the sciences. You know, religion. Religion invokes a lot of concepts about perfection. God being the perfect being, you know, Muhammad being the perfect role model, Jesus being the perfect embodiment of, you know, human, you know, forgiveness and all this other stuff, right? They're all perfect beings or creations. And then in sectarianism, well, if I'm perfect, then these other people aren't perfect. But I mean, this is kind of a problem for me, because a lot of things aren't perfect, right? If I just look at the world, there's a lot of imperfect stuff. And I mean, science doesn't solve any of those imperfections. Sure, science is, you know, going to make it better, alleviate this imperfection, of course. But I mean, science kind of just sucks sometimes. I mean, sometimes in science, we just go, well, we can't do anything about that. We can't do anything about volcanoes erupting. No geographical endeavors are going to stop that. If a volcano wants to fucking explode, hey, you better run away, because it's going to explode. We don't have any scientific way of stopping that. We don't have any scientific way of stopping earthquakes. We currently don't have any scientific way of stopping cancer. Cancer definitely isn't perfect, right? And if science can't do that, well, then how is science perfect? And then we have the problem of religion. Well, if God's so perfect, why are there all these imperfections? I mean, not even on a scientific level. Yeah, maybe we might not be able to understand them. We might not be able to make them any less perfect. Or any more perfect, sorry. But surely if God is this perfect being, then God will be able to create the perfect universe. Why does the perfect universe, as this perfect being created, have so many imperfect things in it? And then, of course, we have the sectarian issue, right? Okay, their beliefs are imperfect, but so are yours. I mean, what beliefs do we follow then? If the Democrats are imperfect, if the Republicans are imperfect, what are we supposed to vote for? The bloody Green Party? Come on. The Green Party. What a joke. But I mean, why do we crave perfection? Well, because of the sciences, religion, sectarianism, these cultures that we've all derived from, you know, human social interactions, etc., etc., these pursuits for wonder and these pursuits for knowledge. But they clash very hard with the imperfect nature of our world, the imperfect nature of humanity, the imperfect nature of society, the imperfect nature of just everything. And I said this earlier, you know, the scientists kind of show us this. What the scientists do is don't show us what's perfect. They kind of show the imperfections of the world. I mean, we know why certain metals are not entirely pure because of their composition or whatever. Why we can't build buildings this high because of the gravitational force, right? So, again, science actually shows us that perfection isn't an is. It's not a fact of the world. So we kind of are led to this is-ought gap again. We have to try and derive perfection. This ought, what ought to be perfect, what is perfect, you know, this conception of perfection. We try to, you know, derive it from an imperfect world. And we really want to do this, as I've said. But it's incredibly difficult. In fact, it's impossible. That's my belief. It's an absolute impossibility. We can't get perfection from imperfect. That just doesn't make any sense. Right, if we have an imperfect world, if I'm imperfect, if you're imperfect, I can't even expect you to be perfect. I might have some idea, but that's just going to be totally eroded because I'm a perfect being, I'm an imperfect being. Well, I am a perfect being, but, you know, that's just my narcissism speaking, right? I'm an imperfect being. I can't believe in something that's perfect. I can't think of something that's perfect because of my imperfections, it's going to have a fault. I mean, if I try and make a building, I'm going to have a bunch of biases, right, that lead me to not think about all these other things, which makes it imperfect, because it doesn't account for every single problem in the world. I'm an able-bodied person. I might make a building that has these amazing set of stairs that are so beautiful, so wonderful, and they're perfect as well, because they go really high, but they don't make you any tired at all. But then someone comes in with a wheelchair, and suddenly my building is no longer perfect. It's actually quite terrible because I've excluded a large population of human beings from allowing to enter this amazing staircase. So now I have to make an elevator next to it. And oh, I made the perfect elevator. But the cable ties are not going to be perfect because I don't have the perfect understanding of architecture and gravitational force. So it might one day break. Well, everything breaks, right? So it's going to have to one day. It doesn't last forever. It's not perfect. It's not totally immutable either. They're going to need replacements and changes. They're going to need to be checked. So clearly they're not perfect, because something that's perfect doesn't need to be checked. It just is perfect. We don't have to worry about it at all. But I'm going to have to worry if this elevator crashes, right? For a bunch of different reasons. So we try to derive perfection. We try to come to this perfect, right, from an imperfect world. And I mean, this is kind of Plato's thing, right? If you look at Plato, Plato said that there was this perfect world, right? This perfect, absolute, you know, world of forms. And this world was like the shadow of it, right? It was imperfect because it wasn't the world of forms. And in fact, pardon me, in fact, what we're doing wrong is we're not following that world of forms. If we could just follow the world of forms and get to there through reason and logic and deduction, right? Then, well, we would be able to get that world of forms. The problem is, which world of forms? I mean, I can derive to a conclusion about ethics or morality or what is this world of forms perfectly fine through my form of logical reasoning. But just like my building, what if somebody who has totally different biases, totally different ideas, stems to another, you know, conclusion from their reasoning? Mine can't be perfect. I mean, if mine was perfect, wouldn't everybody just come to this perfect conclusion, right? So, not only do we have an imperfect world, not only do we have imperfect beings, we also don't have perfection then. We don't have perfect. But I mean, let's take a step back for a second. Let's take a further step back, right? And ask, so why do we want perfection? I mean, like, why do we really want perfection? Yes, sectarianism. Yeah, religion. Yeah, sciences is going to answer all our questions. And we're going to be able to live in this perfect world, right? This utopia, right? But I mean, just think about it for a second. Do we need perfect? Is perfect really a necessity of our lives? Do we really need to sit down and try and conjure up what is perfect? I mean, we'll be stuck in circles, right? Oh, it's perfect because of this, but then there's this little thing. Oh, okay, we'll fix that, but then we kind of lose this thing. See, the way I kind of see the world is kind of like, I'm not sure if you played Among Us, but you know on Electrical, where you kind of have these dials that go up and down, and you have to like pick one thing, and you have to move down another thing. You know, that's kind of like the world. It's like, right? If the world was perfect, we'd be able to put all these things to 100. Everything would be able to be perfectly good, right? Everything would be absolutely incredible. We'd be able to force 100% pleasure, 100% goodness, 100% moral, whatever. Okay, I forgot what I was gonna say, but that doesn't matter because I'm perfect, right? We'd have perfect perfection, right? We'd have perfect perfection, but we don't even need that. I mean, I get through my life perfectly reasonably, perfectly reasonably, right? I get through my life reasonably fine without being perfect. Millions and billions of human beings do. I mean, in the crave for perfection, of course, we realize that there really isn't as perfect. And that might lead us to some nihilism. It might lead us to this conclusion that, oh, nothing's perfect. There's no point. But I mean, perfection isn't really a good goal either. It's kind of this idiot kind of concept of what the world should be. Nobody who goes into philosophy, nobody who goes into the sciences, nobody who truly wants to be an academic in them is really looking for the most perfect thing. I mean, everything has faults in it. And I mean, I saw this in my philosophy class, actually. We'd be in ethics, we'd be in epistemology, and, you know, we'd all think, oh, this guy's really smart, he came up with this thing. But then my teacher would be like, oh yeah, but this is a problem. And everyone would just throw him out. Right? Or her out. Actually, him, because we don't really do a lot of women. That's not even sexist. That's just the fault of the AQA's syllabus. But they would just throw them out straight away. Oh, no, there's this one problem that they have. We have to throw them out. I can't believe in anything. Everyone becomes this incredibly, not just skeptical person. They just don't believe in anything because nothing is perfect. There's always a problem in it, right? And if there's a problem in it, we can't believe in it at all. I mean, but why? When I take an exam and I get 90%, no one's going to say, ah, you don't know that subject because you only got 90%. Well, no, not really. I just failed that test. I didn't even fail it. 90% is the top 10th quartile, right? It's one of the greatest scores you could get in an exam. It's an A star at A level. It's a first class honours, right? At university level. It's really, really, really good. It's like the highest level that people can get. And I mean, when you get 97 or 98, or even if you get 99 or 100, right? 97 and 100 both get you the same reward. You don't get an extra reward for getting 100. Well, maybe you might in some cases, but even then, your knowledge wouldn't be perfect. There's always going to be one question that you're going to fail at. There's always going to be one thing that trips you up somewhere down the line. No one gets everything right in their life, except me, because I'm a perfect human being, obviously. But again, that's the narcissism speaking. You see, I realized that my pursuit for what is good doesn't have to meet this criteria of perfection. When I write my book or my treatise or my pamphlet, or if I'm just in the middle of town screaming my lungs off about Jesus, it doesn't really matter. Well, there's of course requirements that I have to meet, but even the requirements aren't perfect. It just has to be logically coherent, it has to work, have some practical use, and be good in some other sense. Good and perfect are two totally different things. So when I ask my question, what is good, I'm not asking what is perfect, I'm asking what is good. Essentially, what is good enough. And that doesn't sound as luxurious or as strong as what is perfect. But it's not the question that I'm answering, nor is it the question that I would want to ask or answer anyway. You know, I think sometimes we get caught up in perfection. We get caught up in trying to prove everything is 100% true. But the degree of skepticism is kind of fun. I mean, if I knew for a fact that I wasn't living in a simulated reality, life would be a lot sadder, honestly. I mean, I'm not going to say much, but look at the world around you. Is it not at least a bit helpful that the world is maybe not real and this is all just a bad dream that you're going to wake up from? what if there's a demon tricking me? If this isn't the real world and I'm maybe in a video game like Rick and Morty or something, that makes me feel a lot better. It makes me go on through my day a lot better. And of course, don't be ignorant, but some skepticism is healthy. Too much skepticism is craziness, and no skepticism at all is just ignorance. So when it comes to the question of what is perfect and perfect, I think we need to assess our imperfections. Realize we live in a world that's imperfect. We live as imperfect beings. We interact imperfectly a lot of times. That doesn't change anything. It doesn't ruin anything. In fact, it kind of is helpful sometimes to not be perfect, to not have to want to live to this perfect thing. Because if we're not perfect, if we are imperfect, then why do we need to be perfect? There's no real need for it. It's just an assumption that we are trying to make off of really nothing. Nothing is perfect. It's an arbitrary line that we draw. And whether we draw it at 80, 85, 90 or 95 or hell, even at 100, it doesn't really mean anything in the large context of the world. And we shouldn't let it stop us. And we shouldn't prevent ourselves from doing things because it would make us any less perfect. Because any less perfect is really also a made up arbitrary thing. I guess what I'm trying to say in this episode is, after realizing the reasons why we like perfect, after kind of tackling with it myself, after seeing that it's very impractical and doesn't really make sense in a lot of cases, perfection isn't really needed. And in fact, our imperfections are. Our imperfections are very helpful. They help us grow. They help us change. They help us learn new things about the world. When something's imperfect, we get to analyze it and improve it. And it kind of makes improvement this never-ending thing, which I think is very fun. There's always space to improve somewhere in a healthy way. We don't have to improve everything all the time. And sometimes not doing anything is improving because you're taking a break. I mean, that's what relaxation is for, right? So if there isn't this perfect thing that we're reaching, not only does it mean that we're not left struggling to find this perfect thing, but it also means that nobody can claim that there is this perfect thing and we can all just sit down and not care about the world anymore. I think that's a great thing, and I think that it's very useful. So an assessment of our imperfections is very helpful, and I suggest all of you guys think about perfection and imperfection a bit more. And realize that, hey, maybe you don't have to live your life to the perfect. Fuck Hume's is ought gap. It doesn't matter. Just because it's not perfect, because it derives not from an is, but from an assumption, doesn't mean that I can't believe in it. Doesn't mean that I can't follow it. Anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. I hope my rambling and my philosophizing made sense. I tried to keep politics out of it, but of course, I had to involve some. I hope you did enjoy this episode. And I hope you guys continue living your imperfect lives. Thank you.